Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Also with me today, I have a very special guest. I have Bob Dr. Mac Levitis. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kelly.
Yeah.
Aw, you all are too kind.
I'm very glad you're here to talk to us. I want to talk a little bit first about this sort of seems to be the rumor that won't die, I think.
Yes.
It's the yet another wave of speculation, information, who knows, about yet another iPhone SE, right, Charlotte?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this, it seems to be coming from the Far East, from Asia. There was a story from the Nikkei Asian Review that I picked up and had a look at, that there's basically going to be the next version of the iPhone SE coming in 2020, spring 2020. That's what we're looking at. We don't have a name for the device. We don't have a price point. We don't even have any confirmation from Apple, of course, that such a thing might exist.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. Sorry, Bob, I didn't mean to shock you so early in your morning.
I choked on my water.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, no, sorry. Yes, but this is the story that is emerging, and it's interesting because, as you say, Kelly, it's not the first time we've heard this kind of thing, is it?
It really isn't.
And we know that next week we're going to have some probably quite high-end phones appear. And it looks like perhaps kind of 6 months to a year down the line from that, Apple is going to release a lower-cost version. Now, the point of this is twofold, as I understood it. Mm-hmm. One is that it needs to, it's, as we've discussed a lot of times on the show, Apple is under pressure, particularly in emerging markets, China, India, those kind of places, and there's a host of other countries as well, where Android is really dominant and a really, really powerful platform, because it's at it's lower. The phones are lower cost. They do a lot for that people want, and people just think, I don't need to spend the money on an iPhone. Fine. So Apple is needing is apparently looking at a way to win some of those users back. We speculated, didn't we, before the show, if Apple might not even bother to release such a low cost device in places like the US or the UK. I imagine they would, but I think it's fair to say, you and I are not particularly the target market, Kelly. Now, the other element of this is the timing, which obviously is we've got new phones coming next week. So as that happens, you know, in kind of 6, 9, 12 months, there'll be at some point a slowdown in those sales. And then Apple can boost sales again by releasing a new low-cost device. That looks to be the plan if this story is accurate.
Now, this is interesting to me for a couple of reasons. First of all, again, we keep hearing more about there's going to be one. We don't know, you know.
I keep saying I want one.
We don't know when it's going to happen. You're not the only one. I know loads and loads of people who are actually clinging to the SE they had originally.
Because it's pocket-sized.
Because it's thumb-swipe-sized. That's why.
Because it doesn't cost me £1,000/dollars.
That too. But to start with, physically, it's a good size. So for people who don't remember, the SE is basically an iPhone 6S inside, but iPhone 5S outside. So it's that slightly bigger. When we got the first wave after the iPhone 4, we got the iPhone 5, which was just the 4's case with an extra row of icons. So it was an inch bit taller. And the refinement to that was the 5S. And then with the 6, the 6, 7, and 8 were the even bigger than that sizes. So this is a size that people really love. It's got those the 90-degree edge, you know, around the short edges. It's kind of this rectangular thing. The
SE, pretty colors.
It does. The SE is from March of 2016, was the event that they made its debut. So that's another thing about this particular rumor that is interesting to me, which is they're going to release new phones in the fall, and then this one would be released separately in the spring, which is exactly what they did for the SE. Which I remember at the time saying, if I had realized there was going to be an SE, I would have waited and not bought a 6S. I would have bought an SE. I know
But they know that. Why do you think they waited?
I know. Well, and a number of people have also said, are using their old SE until the next generation of SE comes out. They're like, oh, the new phones are even bigger than the one I have. Thank you for saving me $1,000, Apple. Because I'm not buying one that size.
Yeah. Do you not think, though, both of you, that 4 years or 3.5 years between models, well, actually it will be 4 years, won't it, by the time it comes out, if it comes out kind of March, April 2020, that's a long time.
In tech years.
In tech time, yes.
In Apple years.
Civilizations have...
Years.
No.
4 years, yeah.
Not even a Mac Pro upgrade cycle.
That's true.
Yeah, but it's not fair to compare a Mac to an iPhone.
Okay, that's true. But I do know people who are continuing to use them directly because, like, they don't want anything bigger. And they're not buying new ones. You know, again.
I know a guy who's still using a Mac Plus because he likes the form factor.
All right.
No, I mean.
A what?
A Mac Plus 9-inch monochrome screen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some people that won't give up their whatever it is ever until it dies. And, you know, it doesn't matter that the new one is bigger, smaller, faster, whatever. They love what they've got, and they're going to ride it until it dies. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people like that, and I'm not like that, you know?
But
want the latest tech. And so even if they come out with something like this, and mm-hmm. I like the form factor, it won't have five cameras or three. And
no,
you know.
I assume... I think that's really good, because presumably there will be a camera upgrade. That would be one of the features, right?
Right, but if the new ones get three cameras and a bunch of capabilities like, you know, dropping in back, green screening without a green screen, mm-hmm. which I hear is coming, which would be pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, then, of course, I'm not interested in...
But
even if I love the form factor, I want to be able to do the new cool stuff. Plus, I don't know if the... SE would do Animoji, and that's key. If I'm going to spend $1,000, I want talking poop, man.
It's a great point. But, I mean, I don't mean to shock you again, Bob, of a Wednesday afternoon, but you're a nerd.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry to break this to you.
I don't know if anyone's heard.
Well, I hope you're okay.
I'm America's 43rd best-known nerd columnist, I think.
Right. Yeah. But my point being is... that for most people, they wouldn't even know many of the features that would excite you exist, let alone know how to use them in the way that you clearly that you will.
Of course they would. They bought iPhone for dummies.
That's a very good point. Sorry, you're absolutely right.
If only.
But
if only.
For the three people that didn't buy iPhone for dummies, they, you know... People, I think there are lots of people who are happy to have an iPhone, want to spend less money, mm-hmm. and don't need all the kind of form factors.
Don't care all that.
Correct.
All.
They don't care, and they don't require all the technology and upgrades and features that Bob is describing. And mm-hmm. so, for them, I think this could be. If well, you know, look, we need a lot more detail. Let's be really clear about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
But
anything,
if some kind of low cost SE
anything that spreads the word. Yeah, anything that makes
reels people in.
Yeah, gets people on the iPhone in the iPhone family. It's a good thing, and to not have to use Android would be a good thing. And so if there's a lower priced option, that's a great thing. It's mm-hmm. not something that Kelly or I are probably going to run out and buy, but Kelly might because of the form factor.
Yeah, I actually might. I like having something where I can reach everything.
If I could have two iPhones, I would probably want one so I could keep it in my back pocket.
But also the thing about this that is interesting is that every time the SE shows up as refurb, as a refurb device in the Apple Store, it sells out instantly. Every time they have any available there, word spreads, and is, and by the time anybody else finds out about it, they're gone. So,
have you tried refurb-tracker.com?
I have not, because I'm not in the market for an SE.
Okay.
But
I wonder if you'd get your notification fast enough if you do that, or if that's why you can't get it, because you're not doing that and other people are.
But
I'm curious.
Like, every time, and I know the plural of anecdote is not data before John starts switching somewhere. I know this, but I also know that every single time they've gone up on the refurb section of Apple's online store, they vanish immediately. I don't know if it's because Apple's only putting 8 out there at a time or what, but whatever it is that they're doing, like, they cannot keep them in refurb stock, which is something that also sort of, for me, lends a little bit of credibility to, like, you know, we've talked before about, like, all the people who think that they need a Mac Pro because they're going to upgrade everything. And Apple knows how many of those machines are getting upgraded. Those hardware profiles are getting sent in. And people aren't adding the additional stuff like they say they need to be able to. They're just not exercising that option. And I wonder if Apple knows how many SEs they've sold. And so they know whether or not there's a market. And I think as the price of the flagship phone, you know, whatever it is every year, continues to go up, because it's not like it's coming down anytime soon. And we've crossed the 4-digit dollar amount Rubicon. So, you know, now that we're there, it's not like we're coming back from that. This year's phones aren't going to be $799. They're just not. So, given that, I feel like there's definitely an alternative here. And especially as Apple starts trying to move to becoming a services company, they'd be happy. I would think they'd be happy if somebody bought an SE and signed up for Apple Music and Arcade, and they were getting that money from them on the monthly.
It's the razor blade deal.
Precisely.
I was just going to make this point, because, and again, sorry, John, if you are twitching, but you and I said this the other day as well, didn't we, Kelly?
Yes.
If, you know, Apple is moving to a lot of services, you know, making services a much bigger part of its revenue stream. One of the key parts of that is having as many people as possible with Apple devices that want to be in the ecosystem. And perhaps a lower priced phone is a very, I would imagine a lower priced phone is a very important part of that.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we know it's where the 10R came from.
Sorry, John.
I mean, it is. Well, it's where the 10R came from. We know that. So before John gets too itchy and starts texting me about wanting to know what we're talking about, because his eyelid won't stop twitching, we should probably move to another subject. Hi, John. We love you. I want to talk for a minute to Dr. Mac, our own Bob Lovitis, about Catalina, because you've written up some of the features that you really, really like in this new operating system that people who are waiting for an official release are going to get their hands on sometime this month, we think.
I totally have questions, by the way.
Maybe.
All right.
As usual, Apple hasn't announced a ship date other than, I think it was summer. Maybe it's fall. But
it's usually fall. So, yeah, it's usually right around the same time we get the new OS for phones.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, pretty close. I would guess we're going to see it in the next few weeks, which is why I wrote the column when I did.
Excellent.
I've been working with it, though, since the first beta. So.
Okay.
I'm already kind of jaded. But yes, there are a bunch of really nice things. For those who haven't seen the article, the first one is my favorite. I wrote the song iTunes Must Die a couple years ago, begging Apple to put iTunes out of its misery already, for God's sake.
And longtime listeners of this show now know why Bob and I are friends.
And they finally listened to me. And they did everything I asked for in the song. I said, you know, iTunes was about songs. It was great. And once it got all bloated and disgusting and hard to follow and weird modes and incredibly complicated syncing and file moving and I could go on and on, but I don't have to, because if you search the internet for iTunes Must Die free download, you could just listen to my litany of complaints. It's a free download. And by the way, you can also download the lyrics, the guitar chords, also free, if you want to, you know, play it at your next festival. So I am tickled that iTunes is gone. I am absolutely tickled that we now have what looks to be, I don't know, more or less, I'll call it a quasi-file system.
Okay.
It's almost a file system, but you manipulate your files in a way you're accustomed to.
And oh, how is this in practice, though? Like, day-to-day,
awesome.
If you plug your phone in, how does this actually work?
It pops up in the sidebar of the Finder, and you can copy files to and from it. Duh. I mean, it's just, it's like, yeah, so why were you torturing us for all these years, making us use iTunes to sync things that iTunes isn't even, you know, like, affiliated with?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then it got
what
even...
What do you mean? It made perfect sense to sync Word documents through iTunes.
Yeah, and to have to know how to drag them to the right place so it lit up.
You know?
It was always really fun.
It made perfect sense.
Hey, I
transfer all my Word documents through music software.
Yeah, I wrote the book. It was always a fun dance, you know? It was like, I don't know why you have to do these things to move a file to your iPhone, but this is what you got to do. Sorry. You know, I can't fix that. But I could write a protest song. And now we have four apps, and each one is, you know, like, focused and does what it, you know, what you'd expect it to do. It's very nice. I'm very pleased with this. You know, I'm sure there will be detractors and there will be hiccups because it's new.
Sure.
But overall, in the big scheme of things, and, you know, I can't comment on how stable it is or how easy it is to use, even in today's beta, because when they ship, it'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks after that, there'll be an update that will probably change something about it.
Yeah, so, .0.1.
You know, it's gonna mature over time. But I do think in theory, using the Finder to move files back and forth makes total sense. You already know how to do that, and it becomes just like another hard disk or another storage device. You know, you see folders, and if you go into the Files app, you can see where you put your stuff. So it's not like a whole file system, but it's like a quasi-file system. It works, though, and I think for a lot of people, it'll mean the difference between moving things to your phone and knowing how to get to them when you need them,
mm-hmm.
or not doing it at all, which is what most people do.
Yeah.
That's my experience, is most people don't bother with it. If an app says to transfer files back and forth, you have to go into iTunes and do this and this and this, they just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I think that's a big, 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 big step forward.
Now, my question is sort of a general beta question, because this is all based on the betas that you've been using, like you said.
Right.
So I feel like I have to sort of underline that asterisk once in a while. This is, in fact, talking about the beta. But overall, day to day, for the regular stuff that you're doing, updating your book, attempts to take over the world, whatever it is else that you're up to in your afternoons, what is it like day to day for just the normal stuff that you like to do and the things that you're trying to get done to use the new operating system?
I couldn't tell you. I'm still running Mojave on my production machine. Do I look stupid?
I just didn't know if you were trying it out. That's all.
No. Here's the thing. I'm going on a vacation next week. Ordinarily, by about now, probably I would clone my disk and install Catalina on my function, you know, on my production machine, the machine I use to write and edit files. But because I'm going out of town, I'm a little hesitant to make the switch. I do know that a ton of my software isn't going to work anymore. I mean, I ran that 64-bit thing, and, you know, I don't know that I might not need one of those things while I'm away. So I'm going to wait till I get back. So I haven't really, you know, pounded on it with my day-to-day routine.
What kind of thing are you talking about? Because people want to know what kind of software might they have to start thinking about finding replacements for, one of those kind of things.
I wrote a column a couple months ago about there's an app that you can get from St. Clair Software that's free that will tell you all of the stuff that's not going to run under Catalina or that's unlikely to run. And it's anything that isn't 64-bit. So if the developer hasn't updated it in a few years, chances are pretty good it's not going to run when you install Catalina. And I think when Catalina comes out, the first thing every reviewer is going to say is, before you install it, you should know which of your apps are going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this has been going on for a couple years now, and it's racing to a thrilling conclusion, which is basically a lot of people are going to install Catalina and go, why doesn't Office 2008 work anymore?
Right. And you could have that regardless of 32-bit. Like, yes, that's a thing that's officially happening in Catalina. If you've launched any of those applications under Mojave, you've gotten an alert that this app needs to be updated. It's going to run now, but that's going to change. And if you have any doubt, if you have any concern, or the line I usually tell people to draw is, if you are using something on your Mac to make money or to do your job, you need to double extra verify that everything is going to happen before you upgrade that machine. Like you said, Bob, it's not my production machine. What are you kidding? Because not everything is necessarily ready on zero day. Now, lots of stuff is, but that you should definitely check and make sure. And I know everybody listening to this is probably the same sort of people. Like, I already know I need to go check everything before I go install Catalina, but not everyone does. And so this is the thing I want to make sure that, you know, the word is spread, because it should be known throughout the land, like, take a minute before you pull the trigger on that upgrade. Just because the notification shows up doesn't mean you have to do it. So
I'm going to
spend a second and change that.
One step further. Don't install 13.0 or 14, whatever it is, 13.0, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Don't install the 0.0 release. Wait
until 15.
15. It is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 15.0.
iOS 13 and Mac yes. OS 15. Yeah, so don't install 15.0. Mm-hmm. Wait for 15.0.1 or 15.1 if you're patient type. And you know, read sites like Mac Observer to find out what's giving people fits.
Yes.
And then you won't have fits. You know, it's like I always tell mm-hmm. people, anybody that installs a new operating system on day zero, they're either crazy or they do this for a living and are going to make money by doing it. You know, it's
right.
like they're going to be able to write about it and warn people.
Yeah.
And, you know,
the process
like
is where they make
pioneer.
Their money. Yeah.
I take the arrows. But that's okay. I know the risk. For anybody else, especially anybody that's got one Mac and they use it to make a living,
mm-hmm.
I say you wait until, you know, at least the 0.1 release.
Right. And the things that you use to make money, go look up app name Catalina and see where you get.
And run this, I think it's called Go64. Let's see.
I'll have a link in the show notes to make sure that we get
it's called
the right
64
information.
Something.
Yeah.
So Spotlight will find it.
So
whether I'm interested because I'm, as you might imagine, quite, you know, I've got Mojave on my machine and mm-hmm. I'm quite keen to, you know, I haven't installed any of the betas because, you know, shiny pretty Mac Mini, not playing with that.
Uh-huh.
But I am quite keen to, when the full release of Catalina comes out, you know, uh-huh. I want to know what's in there. I'm excited to play with it, to experiment it, to not have iTunes anymore. The whole thing is working
yeah.
for me.
So it is Go64. It is from St. Clair Software.
Yes,
and
it is.
We'll have a link yeah. in the show notes for that. It is a free app. It's basically yep. donationware. So if you download it and everything runs, you should definitely, you know, kick them some cash so that, you know, yeah. because now you're armed with much better information than you had to start with. And it's, I think it's going to be useful, but, you know, definitely, like, you should slow down and take a minute before you install Catalina. Or even if you have the opportunity, you know, set up Catalina on an external drive, boot from that, and see how stuff works for you under that new operating system as a test before you actually move everything when you can't take it back. So
always a good idea. And I got to say, I had a SSD failure in my MacBook Air last month. I wrote about this too.
Yeah.
And I discovered that I could buy a 500 gigabyte external USB 3 SSD for under $100.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to think about if you're thinking about maybe testing the waters of Catalina, if that's not prohibitive. And by the way, I think having a 500 gigabyte SSD that's the size of a book of matches as an external device is something most people would benefit from. But if you wanted to run this, you could, you know, for $100, you could get something that'll run it at normal speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're done, you can use it as a backup disk. You can use it for clone of your internal disk if it's 500 or smaller.
Yeah.
Or you can just use it for data and tuck it in your pocket when you go out so that you could, you know, walk around with 100 movies that won't fit on your MacBook Air.
Yeah. Also great.
So what?
$99, what $89.
What I was interested in as well is we spoke, you spoke and explained a lot about the death of iTunes and the kind of new quasi file system, which I think a lot of people find interesting. What, how much emphasis does Catalina put in working and storing in the cloud, iCloud, presumably?
I don't think it's changed very much from Mojave. You know, you've got all the same options. Okay. And
right.
Yeah, they've got the same documents and desktop thing. If you want to store that stuff to save space, you can tell it to optimize apps by offloading. Wait, maybe that's the iPhone. I'm getting the two confused. I'd have to look to make sure. But
I can still, you know, because I, you know, as it happens, I'll use Dropbox because I had it before iCloud and I just have a big Dropbox account. I don't really use iCloud. You know, it's not going to be upset that I'm not running iCloud as an automatic backup. I can still use Dropbox.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing is...
The first thing I installed on the Catalina machine was Dropbox.
Yeah, sure.
Because all my, you know,
you mean
I need to look at...
after a password manager?
Of course.
No, you know what? I didn't put a password manager on there because I haven't needed it because it's on the other machine and I'm using a virtual machine. So it's all running on one Mac. I mean, I don't need the password manager on the other Mac because it's connected here and I'm screen sharing it so I can do my screenshots and not have to jump between. I guess I could get one of those KVM switches and control both. But this way, they're all on one screen in front of me. So, I have the password manager. It's just installed on the other Mac, the one that's controlling the Catalina Mac. Well, that's after years of doing this, I realized that the best way, the most expedient way, was to run a separate machine for Catalina or for whatever the next operating system was and start from an empty user account because otherwise... I'm writing about stuff that I've installed, you know? It's like the two don't mix. So using screen sharing to do all the screenshots and control the Catalina Mac without having to, you know, move between two computers, a big time saver.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
So that's why there's no password manager. There would be if I had to actually use that machine from its own keyboard and mouse. Yeah.
And there will be. When Catalina becomes for real.
As soon as I put that machine into production, it gets all those desert island things that I wrote about.
Yeah.
You know, the five things I wouldn't do without. And one of them's a password.
But you're kind of you're happy. But Dropbox and all those things is not demanding iCloud sync, is your point?
No, yeah. I don't think it behaves any differently than Mojave with regard to iCloud. I mean, it's got the same batch of things that you can do, but I don't think any more. I don't think any more of it is forced upon you.
Okay.
Very
awesome.
Good.
We will talk more about it as we get closer to the release. We will probably find out more about that exact release date next week, and hopefully we will have Bob back to talk about Catalina once it takes a slightly more official shape. But until then, Bob, thanks so much for coming by today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Have me anytime. I like podcasting.
Excellent.
Not enough to have my own podcast, but I like it.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's noticed, but Bob does enjoy talking to me. Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Thank you so much for coming by, Charlotte.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks, Bob, for your insight on Catalina. It was very interesting.
Well, thank you for having such a lovely accent. I could listen to you all day, Charlotte.
I don't have an accent. That's
Tita Hertz is not an accent, Bob.
I know.
You guys have the accent, not me.
Exactly. I know.
And she puts up with us anyway, Bob, and that's a testament to Charlotte.
Awesome.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.
Aww.